fanboy.
Part-time fanboy doing my thing.
Do you watch Game of Thrones at all?
I do not.
Oh, so you have not?
I've seen people on Facebook flipping out, but
like flipping out. Yeah. Well, when you do get to watch it eventually, like you, I know that you and Nalin tend to
watch. Like full, you know.
Just, yeah, you plow through stuff whenever you get. Yeah. So whenever you do, there is definitely a big shit what the F thing moment that happens in the third season, just to let you know. As if you hadn't already been able to figure it out. So, yeah, it's pretty intense.
That's not working. All I know is that it has something to do with Red
Spoilers.
Wedding.
Spoilers? Yeah. Which I've never read the books. People keep telling me to read the books, and I'm like, I barely have time to read comic books these days. I'm not going to be able to read a book. So.
Yeah, I know. I've seen people be like, if you read the book, you would know.
Yeah. It's like, yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Well, anyway, this is Part-Time Fanboy, and I'm Christian Horn, and this is Corey Blake on the line with me. And we're not here to talk about Game of Thrones because we haven't read the books, and Corey has not seen the show.
We're illiterate.
Yeah, we're very illiterate. We like books with pictures in them.
Right.
But what we had wanted, what we want to talk about is Valiant comics.
Yes.
Because I know that I, as well as you, I think you as well, have been kind of impressed with them as of late.
Well, I mean, as of late, it's relative for me. I mean, I just got a ton of, you know, their graphic novels or comic or trade paperbacks or whatever you want to call them, just kind of you know, dumped on me.
Yeah.
So my exposure has been very recent.
Yeah.
And I just sort of caught up through that.
Yeah.
So I've read I think two new graphic novels came out today. Tomorrow, Wednesday is.
Yeah, they're coming out. I think the new. Is it Harbinger? Is that how you pronounce it? Oh, gosh, I should have looked that up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure it's Harbinger, yeah.
It's not Harbinger.
right.
I'm looking. but, yeah, I think the second book of that comes out this week. And something else, I'm not sure. But
I think it's a reissue of the old Shadow Man from the 90s, I think.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. One of the old books. Well, I mean, I guess that brings up that issue. Were you ever into Valiant when they originally came out?
No, I never read them originally. I remember them being out and being a big deal, but I never.
Yeah.
I was, at the time, I think I was a total just Marvel zombie, and I maybe read one or two things that weren't Marvel, but I was, you know, I did not even. I remember them being advertised, but I didn't care. They weren't Marvel. It didn't matter.
Well, I remember at that time I was very into Marvel and very into Image too, which, you know, at that time Image was nothing.
It would have been like the original Founders Image, right?
Yeah. It would have been the original Founders Image, which you were waiting for like new books for like 2-3 months at a time. But I was very much, you know, like I wrote on the site, Part-Time Fanboy, a while ago, I was very much into art, you know, when I bought my comics. So I was like into the X-Men, into Image, into stuff like that where they used a lot of cross-hatching and line work to get their points across. And and like you, I think I was more of a Marvel zombie, but Image had kind of captured my attention. Maybe some Dark Horse, too. So I think my plate was full when Valiant kind of premiered. And I was like, I can't just go to another, you know, comic book company. It's too much, you know? And I do remember when I picked up those old books, I was not that impressed with the artwork in them. You know what I mean? It didn't seem.
I just remembered that I do have the old Exo Manowar.
So do I. Yeah.
I think it's like Zero or something, and it's like a foil cover, and Joe Quesada does the art.
You have that?
Yeah.
I have a trade of Exo Manowar, and I have the trade of the original Harbinger. And I remember liking Harbinger.
Yeah.
I tried to look for it, and I couldn't find it because I wanted to pick it up. But I remember Harbinger being very much like a little bit like what it is now, the revamp, but it was more of like Kids on the Run sort of thing.
Uh-huh.
You know,
okay.
With an a shadowy organization kind of trying to track them down because of their abilities. But I guess like from what I understand about the original Valiant, it's like Jim Shooter was one of the co-founders, right?
Right. I think he was pretty much one of the architects of the whole universe, as I understand it.
Yeah.
Him and he used to do Iron Man.
Bob Layton?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Here, let me look it up. Valiant. I mean, yeah, I remember that. And from what I remember, it was kind of the fact that, like, and this could be wrong, my memory could be hazy, I sort of remember like Jim Shooter going off to found his own comic company because he wanted to do books that were sort of in the vein of like his new universe that he tried at Marvel, like where they were a bit more in a realistic world as opposed to like spandex and, you know, people flying around and stuff like that.
Right.
You know,
right.
I think that I was not at all interested in that either. Yeah, here in 1989, founded by former Marvel Comics writer, editor Jim Shooter and Bob Layton. You nailed it. Good memory.
Huh.
Yeah, they sold it in 94, I believe, to video game developer Acclaim Entertainment for $65 million. Nice. Huh. So then the company's restarted in 2005 by entrepreneur Dinesh. I cannot pronounce that last name.
I'm assuming it's Shyamdasani.
You got it. You nailed it. Yeah. And former CEO and vice chairman of Marvel, Peter Cueno, I'm assuming, or Cuneo.
Cuneo, something
Cuneo.
Like that.
Yeah. So... yeah, I mean, they've been around for a long time, but Valiant was just kind of like languishing, not really doing anything because...
yeah, yeah. Acclaim, which bought the original Valiant, went bankrupt in the early 2000s, and then this sort of new Valiant Entertainment, bought up all the rights and properties and has started over and relaunched, you know, started over in the whole new universe.
Yeah.
So in reading these, I'm not entirely sure how radical of a revisioning of these properties this is, but yeah, as sort of we were saying, I have been entertained.
Yeah, and I think that they did revamp it enough to make them different for like the older viewers, but to me, from what I remember of Exo Man of War, well, I mean, it is quite different, but the concepts are familiar enough to where, like, if I would imagine that if somebody who was really into Valiant back in the day would still really like these, because I mean, I remember the basics of Exo Man of War and thinking, wow, that was a really cool idea when I got that trade, like, and that wasn't too long ago that I bought that trade, like maybe 3-4 years ago that I found that and read it and was like, oh, this is cool, you know, not necessarily blown away by it, but thinking that the idea was really original. So
yeah, it seems like the high concepts of everything is pretty much the same, but
yeah,
execution I'm sure is probably
yeah. So I mean, why don't we just go through like some of the trades that we've read,
sure,
you know, and compare our thoughts, because I know that you and I might have some differing of opinions on some of these books, but on the whole, I mean, I think that Valiant is kind of kicking ass, in my opinion.
I think they're approaching it really smart as far as, you know, just as a universe, because
yeah.
you really can just read one of these or two or three
yeah.
and be fine.
Yeah.
It's not, you know, even though there are, and this may change in time, and I know that there's like a crossover that's kind of happening now, but
yeah.
So I don't know how long that lasts, and I hope and would encourage them to maintain that the integrity of each title so that you don't need to read other things. But
yeah.
But the first volume or two of everything is pretty self-contained with light sprinkling of allusions to everything else, so uh-huh. that if you get everything, it's you can see how things might coalesce, and then otherwise it's they're just, you know, they stand on their own.
Yeah, and that is one of the things that, you know, I love about it, but makes me nervous too, because it seems to be that, you know, a new company will start with that sort of initiative of like, we're just going to keep them self-contained, and if you read one, you're going to be able to understand it, you're not going to have to read the other books, and then somewhere down the line with independent publishers, they get the idea of like, let's do the crossover, and then all of a sudden, like, they're just mimicking what the big two are doing, which is like, you know, crossovers, and then things get confusing. But I mean, for now, as far as like these initial trades, the first trades, I mean, I really had a blast reading each and every one of them. I mean, I liked a couple more than the others, but I'm like you. I would say, like, please, I know that you're doing, like, Harbinger Wars right now, and I'm wondering how that's going to play out in the trades, because the whole reason that I didn't jump into Valiant initially was because, again, I don't read, you know, pamphlet books anymore, you know, and I was just like, I'll wait for the trade. And then I went to WonderCon and bumped into their booth, and the first trades are only, like, $10 each. So,
yeah, it's really smartly priced, yeah.
Yeah, they're really reasonably priced, and, you know, so I picked up three of them and decided that I liked them a lot, and I was like, okay, I'm going to pick up more of this stuff. So, and that's what I ended up doing. On Free Comic Book Day, I ended up picking up Exo Man of War 1 and 2, like, and then Shadow Man as well. So, yeah, I mean, I think they're doing a really smart thing by, you know, keeping each title self-contained. But like I said, with the next wave of trades, we're going to see, like, uh-oh, like, can you just read this without having, you know, now that there's a crossover? So,
right.
I don't know. But so, which one was your favorite? And I think that that's probably going to be, I remember you sent me a list, and we kind of compared lists, but I think that your favorite was kind of one of my least favorites. So why don't we just start with that one?
I think going in, I thought Archer and Armstrong was going to be my favorite because I had read the first issue on Comixology and and thought it was a really strong first issue.
Yeah.
And so yeah. I did enjoy it, but I thought the first issue was stronger than the first issue or two were stronger than the whole thing, the thing as a whole. I think as a whole, I think my favorite was probably Harbinger, and which yeah. is interesting because when I was at the booth at the LA Times Festival of Books, I was talking to the guys at the Valiant booth, and one of the guys who I had met previously, he thought that I would like this more, and I've only spoken with him like maybe two or three times, so he's good instincts.
Really?
Yeah, I think Harbinger was the one that I think overall was the strongest for me.
See, that's interesting because I thought that Harbinger was the one I was gonna like the most. And what, you know, on initial, because when I was at WonderCon, I was like, okay, I'm only going to pick up two of these books, you know, I'm going to just, and I started looking through, and again, I'm an art whore. So yeah. I was looking at the ones with the art that appealed to me the most, and
right.
Shadow Man hadn't come out yet. And to me, I started looking through Harbinger, Bloodshot, and Archer and Armstrong. And I was like, I cannot decide between these three, so I ended up buying all three. And uh-huh. you know, on first glance, I thought, oh, I think I'm really gonna like Harbinger because I think the artwork is absolutely fantastic, and at first glance the concept seemed like something that I would really be into. But my favorite ended up being Archer and Armstrong. Like, I was nuts about Archer and Armstrong when I read it. But what is it about Harbinger that you really liked? Because I'm very curious, like, what is it that like spoke to you?
What I liked, and again, I haven't read the original, so a lot of the things are sort of surprises for me, where One of the things I think that I like the most is the way it kind of plays with the perception of mental illness and drug addiction and that sort of thing surprised me. I did not expect that. So I enjoyed that, and I thought what they did with it, it was nice, where they didn't put a lot of judgment on it. It was just sort of, these are the characters, and they're not entirely stable.
Well, why don't you explain the concept really quickly for people who might not know?
Harbinger is about a, at least this first trade, focuses on the main character, I guess, Peter Stanchek, who has all of these abilities. I guess he's psychic, basically? Is that...
Uh-huh, yeah.
And this large corporation seeks him out because the head of the company believes he's going to end up being very dangerous. And so he's hoping to bring him into his circle and to control him and keep him from becoming very dangerous and killing people and whatever else.
Sure.
And so that's, I think, what I liked, is that the main character, who is the protagonist, the foreshadowing is that he's going to end up being the villain.
Yeah.
And who you would think seems to be the main bad guy, who he's, you know, he's mysterious, he usually dresses in dark, he's deceiving people. He runs this very altruistic company, and he is trying to prevent something bad from happening.
Uh-huh.
And so that was one of the things that I really liked, where it sort of inverted the conventions.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's that I did like that about it, but to me, I think like Harbinger was very much, to a certain extent, a lot of stuff that I'd seen before, like in comics, you know what I mean? It reminded me very much, and maybe from the beginning, I mean, it does take that sort of twist towards the end, or the middle, but in the beginning it reminded me very much like, oh, this is kind of like X-Men, like Scanners, like, you know, Super People on the Run, which I've seen before, like, not just in comics, but like in movies and stuff like this. So Harbinger didn't really ring, like, speak to me as far as like originality was concerned, and I felt that I'd seen it before, you know what I mean? And
yeah, I mean, the school thing definitely felt sort of...
Oh, yeah.
You know, like, I'm glad that was a short-lived...
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, and, you know, by the end of the trade, he's on the run again, right?
Right.
Yeah, yeah. And which, you know, I really liked. He's kind of on his own again, and there's sort of, like, this background to the benefactor of, you know, the Harbinger Foundation, which is, you know, the company that... is training all these, I don't know what you would call them, psychics, mutants, you know.
Right, sure.
And there's a bit of like a backstory that goes back like several, what, like a couple hundred years or something like that? I'm not...
Yeah.
So there's a lot of that, like, you know, Eastern mysticism involved in it and stuff like that. So I thought it was like a very strong book, but in the end, just for me, I felt like I've kind of seen this all before. But I will be picking up that second book because I liked it enough to where I was like, okay, at the end of the book, I was like, I want to see where this is going. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And it is really, I cannot, you know, emphasize this enough, that I think that the creative team, I mean, besides the writing and the dialogue, but I mean, I just think that the artwork is fantastic, you know, and the coloring is beautiful, you know, it's just like great. And then there's this, I'm flipping through the book now, the little bit in issue number 2 where they find the baby with powers that,
right.
Yeah, I mean, that's just like, that's amazing, you know, because you're not even dealing sort of like with the X-Men, oh, you know, once we hit puberty thing. It's like a lot of these people just have the powers from when they're born, you know?
Yeah, and that sequence is just, I like how they did the flashback.
Yeah, it's beautiful. So, I mean, Harbinger, it's really funny to say that it was my... well, it wasn't my least favorite, but it wasn't like in the top, but that's like saying, like, you know... I don't know, like, that the Rolling Stones aren't as good as the Beatles. You know what I mean? I really think that, like, all these books were fantastic, so... you know.
Yeah, even my least favorite was something I would keep reading to see more.
Absolutely, absolutely, which is impressive in and of itself, you know. Yeah. So, I don't know. What's that?
Do you want to talk about Archer and Armstrong next, since we both mentioned that?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I absolutely loved Archer and Armstrong. I mean, I thought out of all the Valiant books that I've read, I just thought it was, you know, kind of original, fun, had a really good pace to it. You know, the characterizations were fleshed out, and I was blown away by Archer and Armstrong. But you had said that you kind of felt like as it went on, it lost a little bit of its originality, or
no? I wouldn't say originality, but I think where it loses me is the pacing. Actually, I thought it seemed a little rushed at the end.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I thought the sort of the climax and the end of it seemed. You know, I think this only collects four issues.
Yeah.
And so it almost felt like they started issue one and maybe halfway through two, and they felt like they had five or six issues, and then somebody said, no, we have to make this four issues.
Yeah, I could see that. I could see that where there's a little bit of a feeling of, especially with the revelation towards the end.
Yeah.
You know, where, exactly. You know, Archer has to face off against somebody who he really cares about. Towards the book, but I mean, as far as concept goes, I mean, basically, you know, gosh, it's kind of even hard for me to explain. You know, it's to me, it's just so basically, what you've got is a secret society, right? And Archer is sort of being raised in this, I guess, what would be the equivalent, the Mormons or something like that.
Maybe, yeah, something like the Mormons or Scientology or some sort of, like, religious cult. I mean, it could even be, you know, fundamentalist Christian or...
Yeah.
He's raised in this... Well, it's kind of funny. This... What is it? It's not a zoo. It's like a...
Like an amusement park. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, an amusement park, but which is actually just the sort of front of this religious cult owned by... or run by, I guess, a senator and his wife.
Yeah.
And they have adopted all of these children, and to try to raise the perfect assassin.
Yeah.
To kill what ends up being Armstrong.
Yeah.
They don't
some
know
sort
that.
Of like Antichrist or something like that. Like
yeah, they just so think he's this. He just think he they he's this you know Mordor type character.
Yeah, that he's being. Going to be. He's going to end the world.
Yeah,
something like that. And
so Archer's sent out to kill him and find him, and he's and I do. I mean, I do. I really like, especially the first issue. But you know, the characters are really strong, and so Archer's sent out into the sort of real world for the first time in his life, and the culture shock is pretty funny.
Yeah, it's like the Amish. It's sort of like the when the Amish, you know, I guess I forget what it's called, like Runspa. I can't remember the exact term, but
right.
Like before they decide they're going to actually, you know, grow up and live in that Amish community, they get sent out into the world so that they can experience, you know, the sin of man or whatever,
right.
You know, and that's part of like what Archer experiences. He goes out into the world and it's like, oh my gosh, it's more horrible than I could have imagined, you know. And
yeah.
He's so like lost and he's so naive, and I love the whole, you know, dichotomy of like that he's this badass that can basically take anybody out, but he's just not ready at all for, you know, the real world, you know?
He's incredibly naive and incredibly sheltered. And
exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And, I mean, he can't even curse.
Yeah.
He can't even bring himself to, like, say a bad word. He uses stuff like golly or gosh or, you know, stuff like that. And so then eventually he does find Armstrong, who is supposed to be his target and who he thinks... is or the organization that he's been raised by thinks is going to bring the world to an end, and he starts realizing that not everything is as it seems, right?
Right. Yeah, he's been told a lot of myths to so that his parents can I guess I don't really know what their goal is, but some nefarious plot of some kind.
Yeah. Well, it's really funny. I'm even looking at the end of the first issue where it's like, you know, the 1%, you know, are like worshiping a golden calf. And, you know, it's basically, there's different sects of religions kind of like vying for control over something so that they can kind of take over the world, right?
Yeah.
And Archer is this one particular, whatever, I'll call them the Senator Amusement Park sects, you know, person to go out and kind of accomplish their goals. And, you know, like we said, his eyes get kind of opened. But what you do find out, too, is that actually Armstrong really is some kind of mystical character because he's been alive for a very long time.
Yeah, and I like how they did that, actually. The flash, there's a flashback early on.
Yeah.
We kind of find, you know, you realize later on that that's him.
Yeah.
And I thought that, and it which explains why he's long, you know, so long-lived.
Yeah.
And I think one of the things that a little bit disappointed me where I thought there was an opportunity to, there's sort of a quest aspect to it where you're trying to gather all of these artifacts. And
yeah.
I thought they kind of rushed through that, which could have been, there could have been a lot of fun adventures where you could
yeah.
have, I mean, you could have just done a whole adventure, a whole trade on each item. And instead, by the end of the book, we've got them all.
I thought
that was kind of, I was like, oh, that would have been fun.
I could totally understand what you're saying with that. I just felt that what impressed me the most about the book was just how things kind of kept moving. And quite honestly, this guy's art, Clayton Henry, to me was just astounding. You know,
he's
just
fantastic.
Really, really great panel layouts and really great just, you know, anatomy. And just the fight scenes look like, you know, like I was watching like some sort of kung fu flick or something, you know?
Right.
Like I really bought into every sort of panel that I was looking at. I just felt like, and I don't think I've ever seen this guy's work anywhere before. Maybe I have and I just didn't realize it, but I think he's
done Marvel work, but I can't remember. Maybe Spider-Man or something.
Maybe. Oh, that makes sense. I mean, because, you know, the way he draws action sequences, I could see a Spider-Man artist, you know, needing to be able to draw like this. So,
and but, I just think his faces are so great, and
yeah,
the characters. I mean, each character is an individual, moves and emotes as an individual character. And,
yeah, you absolutely get sort of the singular characterization of each individual. Like when you're looking at them, not one character looks the same, and each one has their sort of own body language.
Right.
And it's just, I just think it's fantastic. And this was definitely my favorite. This one was the one that I think the next trade of this one is coming out, and there's absolutely nothing that's going to stop me from picking that up, because I was just, well, I totally agree with you. To a certain extent about like the artifacts and everything, but to me it seems like they might be aiming for something bigger, you know, beyond that.
Right. I mean, clearly at the end they've certainly set up other things to happen.
Yeah.
And I thought that was, it's actually an interesting case with, I think, nearly all of them, where there's this sort of status quo set up where it seems like this is going to be the ongoing status quo.
Yeah.
And then by the end of the book, that's actually not the status quo anymore.
Yeah,
and sometimes I think it's great, and I like that they're keeping things moving. But other times I think they jump over opportunities for stories where I feel like, okay, we need the book to be here by the end of the story arc, and it feels more contrived than natural.
Yeah, I mean, do you think that they're sort of like writing towards the end of their arc? You know what I mean?
Yeah, that is what I'm, yeah.
Yeah, heading sometimes towards the end of the light at the end of the tunnel, and maybe thinking about getting to the ending instead of like fleshing out like what's in the middle of the story.
Yeah.
Yeah, I totally understand what you're saying with that. But like I said, Yeah, I mean, there's just something about Archer and Armstrong that really spoke to me, and well,
it's definitely the most fun of yeah. the bunch, and it and the dialogue and the way the characters, especially the two main characters, interact with each other is funny and entertaining, and it's definitely one of the strongest.
Yeah, and I definitely think that, and I think you hit the nail on the head. It's the most fun to me. Like, yeah. And reading comics, like, lately, you know, especially superhero comics, there's not, or maybe I'm not reading the right things, you know, there's not a lot of sense of humor about them, both in the plot or in the characters. And to me, this felt like something like Joss Whedon could have written.
Right,
you know,
right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And, well, I don't need that to be in everything that, that I read. I just felt like this was a breath of fresh air, you know?
Yeah, there was a little bit of playfulness that was really refreshing.
Yeah, big time. I loved Archer and Armstrong. I was very excited after I read that. You know, it's like when you read something and you're like, oh, that was so great. Like, and you just hate, like, when it ended, like, oh no, like, that's the feeling that I had. And when I read something like that, it's like almost like, ah, I want to go out and get the single issues, and I'm like, no, but $4 a book, I'm not going to do it. You know, so yeah. Archer and Armstrong almost made me go back to the comic shop, but I figure I can wait for the trade. So
that's an endorsement.
Yeah, that's a big endorsement. Almost made me go back to.
I am sad to see that Clayton Henry, I think he left after this
story. I think so too. Yeah. Yeah, which kind of sucks. Yeah, that brought me down when I found out about that. Yeah. Yeah, but hopefully, I mean, they seem to have a good track record with artists. So,
yeah.
I don't know. So, after Archer and Armstrong, what was your next favorite?
I think I will say Exo Manowar.
Yeah. Yeah, Exo Manowar was pretty solid. Like, how did you... Did you read the first two? Did you get the second trade, too?
Yeah, I got one and two, volume one and two.
Yeah, I got them at the same time as well, just because I knew that, based off of everything else, I was like, well, this must be great. You know what I mean? So, what did you think? I mean, like, what was your initial take on it?
I liked it. I thought it was an interesting premise. Again, I was not familiar with this character, even though I had that issue that... that I didn't remember I had till we were just talking.
Yeah.
But it's an interesting character. It's almost, and it doesn't feel contrived like the way I'm explaining it. It doesn't feel hodgepodgey. But it seems like with the armor, Iron Man, with sort of the mystical sort of pseudo fake religious kind of thing.
Yeah.
Thor, and then with the Man Out of Time aspect, like Captain America.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, sort of rolled all into one in kind of a really, cool, clever way.
Yeah.
I liked it. I liked the historical aspect of it. I liked the art was great.
Yeah.
There were a couple things that kind of are question marks for me. And
yeah.
Again, there's another thing where I think they kind of... get out of an opportunity for a story. They kind of jump over or something.
Sure,
but,
sure.
But overall, I enjoyed it, and I am intrigued and interested to read volume three. I thought, and, I was worried too. Like, oh well, will it hold up? Will the second volume still work? And I still liked it. You know, it's a little macho for me.
What does that mean?
Well, it's a little
testosterone-y.
Yeah, a little too testosterone-y, which is a great new
San
noodle
Francisco from, treat.
Exactly, thank you. but not so much that I feel like these are just He-Man with no character whatsoever.
Sure, sure.
It's on the cusp, but it worked.
I remember that with the original. Like, way back in the day, hearing about the concept, and it's like, basically, it's like, what if Conan the Barbarian had Iron Man's armor?
Right.
I was like, oh,
right.
That's cool.
That's pretty much what it is, yeah.
Yeah, and that's very much what it is, although I think that this guy is smarter than Conan the Barbarian. But
right.
it's interesting with what you mentioned with Archer and Armstrong, where you thought, like, they rushed it a little too much. I felt like that the beginning of Exo Manowar kind of, like, dragged it out a little too much because he kind of doesn't get into the armor until
not for quite a while, actually.
Yeah, for like till the third issue, and I was like,
I didn't mind that as much, but I can see, you know, I can understand that.
Yeah, I mean, there was definitely a part or end of the second issue, excuse me, but I mean, I really did like the take of. You know, I did like how they took their time, they developed the characters, but there was a little bit of me that was getting impatient in the beginning. It's like, okay, I get it. You've been kidnapped by aliens, and you're slaves, and it's miserable. Let's get on to something, and then something more. Like, I'm ready for the action, you know what I mean? Like, I'm ready for, you know, whatever sci-fi, like, you know, superhero thing that you're going to give me. And so maybe they were really smart, because by the time it showed up, I was like, yeah, all right, let's kick some alien ass, you know? And I was
I actually appreciated it, I think, because he's obviously there for a long time. And I like that we're getting that he's suffering for a long time. And I think if it were to just skip to him stealing the armor, it would have felt a little more generic.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I maybe just felt like they could have moved it maybe to, you know, him getting the armor maybe a little bit further on in the second issue instead of, but it made for a good cliffhanger.
Yeah. No, that's probably a happy medium. I can see what you're saying.
Yeah, but I definitely really, you know, just really enjoyed it. And I mean, well, we haven't even really talked about the general concept. I mean, we've said like what it mimicked, but it's basically, you know, ancient Rome, right? And he's an enemy, his tribe or, you know, country are enemies of the Roman Empire, and he basically gets kidnapped by aliens and his people get turned into slaves. And in the course of events, basically what you find out is that these aliens worship this mysterious suit of armor, you know, for some reason. And it's sort of like a trial by fire, almost like Camelot, right? Like King Arthur, where, you know, they'll choose somebody every once in a while to try the armor on. And if the armor works for them, then they'll become, you know, their King Arthur or their leader. But the problem is that anyone who puts the armor on, they just die. From the alien race. And I guess in desperation, you know, when they're trying to escape their enslavement, he puts the suit of armor on, the human, the lead character, and the armor ends up working for him.
Because
I mean, that's...
humans are better than other species.
Yeah, we're the best. I mean, that's just the way... Everybody knows it. Well, I mean, and that's the thing that I found really intriguing about the whole thing, because I'm thinking like, well, if it worked for him, maybe it's a human artifact. Like, you know?
Could be, yeah.
I mean, my theory, and this is just me, you know, and maybe people who are reading the Valiant books by now, you know, because it's further along than where we are. But my theory is that it might be a suit of armor from the future or something.
That could be. I mean, it's you know, because it sort of shifts, it shapeshifts kind of around whoever's wearing it, so it's hard to tell. I mean, it could be that he's just exceptional, or it could be, like you say, it could be like a human thing where any human can wear it.
Yeah.
You know, or maybe it's coded to certain, you know, just to humans, or it's coded to a certain lineage of humans, or you know, I think one of the questions I have is, it seems like there's a time jump. And I don't understand, and that doesn't, after reading Volume 2, I don't know if they're ever going to bother to even address it.
You talking about between the time he gets kidnapped and the time he returns to Earth?
Right, exactly.
Well, don't you think that has something to do with, like, you know, traveling between the stars and the theory of relativity? You know, it's like if you go really fast and then time goes by faster, whatever. You know what I'm saying?
I suppose, but then, I mean, wouldn't the aliens have... There's still a time lag or time discrepancy between the aliens that he left, which are still alive because they're in Volume 2.
Yeah.
And they're occurring at the same time as events in Earth, which they had left at the beginning of Volume 1. And, you know, so there's like... It doesn't quite add up.
Well, but the aliens that he left behind, are you talking about the ones that are disguised as humans?
Right. And the ones that go that take him and leave with him.
Yeah, well, but the ones that take him and leave it with him would age with him, right?
Right, and then but what about? And then in Earth, it's.
Yeah, on Earth they're the descendants of, you know, they've been, you know, breeding and stuff like that. That was my understanding.
Right. Like, you're probably right. I think that's right.
Yeah, and so my assumption would be, I don't know, physics, that, you know, they were staying in touch somehow, you know, with the people on the planet, because they obviously, you know, people who are listening to this and have not read the book might not, you know, don't know what we're talking about, but they're able to, like, sort of project, the aliens are able to project their psyches across, like, the spaceways, right. So they can do, like, Skype. From across the universe and talk to each other, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, I understand what you're saying, and it would be kind of weird if you stayed the same age and everybody that you left behind was getting older and then they're descent. Like, how do you manage that? I guess that makes sense. And you're probably right that's something to be addressed.
I mean, it was, you know, it was whatever. It was 400 AD, you know, I mean, like it was like, you know, 20 years or whatever.
Yeah, it was a long time ago.
And he teleported, you know, and then he teleported from their ship to Earth. You know, there's a disconnect somewhere. I mean, you might be right. You know, I suppose there's some physics, maybe the physics thing is the answer, but I feel like that doesn't still quite work, but maybe it does.
Yeah, well, with whatever explanation, I mean, it is a book about a guy who's a barbarian who wears a suit of armor like Iron Man, you know?
But that doesn't excuse...
No, I know.
It doesn't mean you can do anything.
No, but I'm just saying, like, they'll come up with some explanation. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, that could be the most flimsiest of explanations, and that would do it.
Yeah, that's what I meant. I don't mean, like, just bad writing. Don't explain. But I understand what you're saying, because I hadn't even really thought about that as I was reading it. But it's interesting. For me, the biggest problem with Volume 2 was Ninjak. You know,
it's a really terrible name.
Yeah, it is really bad.
Let's be serious. Come on.
Yeah, yeah. And I also, I mean, I liked the way things played out, but I sort of was kind of, I always get, and this always happens, like used to happen with the Superman comics or like the Superman animated series or Smallville. It's like once they were kind of like, well, I don't know what to do with this guy. They were like, well, let's have Dr. Fate guest star, and it's, you know, it just becomes like a guest star book, and that's what I was kind of worried about. But they managed to pull it off for me, because, you know, I mean, Ninjak, even after reading this, is not a character that I think I'll be that interested in checking out. You know what I mean?
Right.
So
it did seem. I see what you're saying. It did seem early for a whole story of guest starring. You know.
Yeah.
I think you're right. They did sort of make it work in that. It made sense why he was brought in.
Yeah.
But I hear what you're saying. That makes, you know.
Yeah. And for me, the really interesting thing too is that, like, after the second trade, you know, where do you go from there? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because it seems like something big is going to happen. But to me, it's like, well, what's going to happen with this barbarian guy? I mean, because at some point, it's like he's going to have to, whether he wins or loses or, you know, especially if he wins, it's like he's going to have to assimilate into society. And is it just going to be like the barbarian, like learning how to read English, figuring out how to make cappuccino? You know what I mean? I mean, that's sort of the trap that this book could fall into, you know?
Well, I'm sure the aliens are going to be, well, it seems like the next story arc is going to be some intergalactic, you know, battle with the aliens. And then, you know, I don't know if, you know, he's probably not going to beat all of them. And so
maybe
go back to Earth, and then I'm sure there'll be some bad guys, you know, on Earth that he has to take care of. But yeah, I hear what you're saying. And actually, the sort of acclimation thing, that was my other and larger problem with Volume 1, is that once he arrives in the present, and initially there's that sort of confusion, which
is
completely understandable, where he, you know, he thinks these are all Roman, you know, and these are just jets that are in Italy.
Magic, yeah.
Yeah, and so he's fighting, and, you know, there's sort of a misunderstanding, and
as,
but then he has that flash where the armor just sort of like uploads, you know, every issue of the New York Times or whatever.
Yeah.
And I just thought that was such a sort of, you know, I don't know if it's It's just it's sort of read as a plot device, or it's just as an easy out of, oh, let me fix this for you. You know, like getting the, just removing the character's problem just with a snap, with a wave of a hand.
Yeah, yeah.
And I thought it would have been so much more interesting if he had to, this primitive, you know, mind relatively, had to figure out that he, that time has, that immense time has passed, and that the world has changed.
Yeah. Yeah, and even I think, like, even like beyond what you're saying, just like he got all this information uploaded into him that he was very easily able to assimilate, you know what I mean? I mean, that would be like you or me going like 900, what, 1,000 years, 1,500 years into the future, and the human race is like riding magical ponies, or, you know, I don't know what, you know, and it's just like, it sounds like a nice place, but, you know, it's just something so beyond our understanding that we're just like, that you would not be able to handle it. Like, I thought, like, okay, this guy's a badass. He's been taken up into space. He's been, like, basically Spartacus in space for, like, however long, you know, so I can maybe understand, like, that he's able to deal with things that are supposed to be beyond his scope of understanding, but like coming back to Earth and like realizing your whole family's dead, and that there's vehicles and cars, and, you know,
the internet,
society is completely different, that Italy is not like the center of the universe anymore, you know, just all that, it just seems like it would have blown his mind away a little more.
Yeah, there's a little bit of it in the beginning of Volume 2, which I thought there were some nice moments there, but he kind of collects himself a little easily, and I'm with you. You know, that's a hard character to write. It's because how do we write from somebody from 400 AD who is not present? I mean, that's a tough perspective.
Yeah.
To write from. But I think it would have been much more interesting than just sort of the easy info dump.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, I agree with you, and I feel that maybe that aspect of the story is rushed, like certain aspects of Archer and Armstrong were rushed. But, you know, I feel like, and now that I'm thinking about it, but I also feel like this is kind of like a new comic company, you know, and they've got to make, like, a really good basic impression with their first, you know, batch of issues. And so maybe rushing the story along, or, like, getting into the action or to the meat of it, you know, is their way of being like, hey, you know, like, there's a lot of, like, really good sort of, like, action stuff going on here. You know what I mean?
Yeah, because, it could be.
Because I feel like what you were talking about in Archer and Armstrong and this in Exo Man of War, there's a lot of opportunity to just be, like, you know, navel-gazing. You know, it's like, oh, I'm so sad. My wife is... You know, that could go on for... We've seen that happen in other comics, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the X-Men maybe being, like, the worst example, where it's like, oh, Jean Grey is dead. Oh, Jean Grey is back. Oh, my God. Psylocke loves me. No, this person... You know, it's just like... It could really go bad, like, really quickly. So maybe that's their way of just being like, look, we're just going to skip over, you know... and maybe they'll address that later, like you said. I don't know, you know, because to me that is very interesting. Is like, how's this guy gonna deal, you know?
Yeah, I mean, like, I think that's the real crux of the character, and you know, I hear what you're saying. Obviously, it's all in moderation, and I think they might have just leaned a little too much on the action and establish. Again, it's like, you know, this is the end point. The character has to look like this. So. And so, you know, it's hard when you're in a universe and or working within a fictional universe and you don't have the luxury of just sort of constructing your own storylines and story arcs. However you want. So, you know, they got to work with editors, and there's a sort of a framework that they're working toward and sort of a structure that they have in mind at a certain point. And so,
I mean, there's even that sequence where he attacks the, is it the British embassy?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
And I'm thinking to myself, like, that, well, but this is the sort of stuff that keeps me interested. And like you said, I hope they go back to it, because there's a part of me, it's like, well, you can't just ignore that. You know, you can't just ignore all this stuff. At some point, you do have to address it. Like, who's going to believe that there were a bunch of aliens in the British embassy? Who, at this point, who's going to believe that you're the good guy? I mean, Ninjak, but who the hell knows who he is? You know what I mean?
Right.
So, There's definitely, I mean, I agree with you. There's also an Archer and Armstrong. I do think that there's a lot of stuff that it's like, okay, guys, maybe slow down, you know, or maybe their plan is to just, you know, write for these small trades and keep like small chunks of story and keep the action moving, which, you know, that could be damaging as well, just as much as, you know, like, oh, I'm so sad, you know, right, could be damaging. Right. So I don't know. But all in all, I mean, we're kind of, I don't want to make it seem like we're trashing this stuff, because I still think like Exo Man of War stands up to like a lot of other stuff that's on the stands. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
stands
I mean up. It's still an entertaining read. It's a tricky balance and
yeah,
it's yeah no, it's still an entertaining read and it's and it was, I liked the reveal of the aliens, the sort of, you know, a little bit. I don't know, borrowing it might. This might have been a concept from the original Valiant, but you know, the sort of Skrull shape-shifting aliens hidden within the world.
Yeah.
And I liked that whole premise, and I liked the sort of historical aspect of it, where these, for generations now, these people have been living in secret, and now you've got sort of these sleeper cells, and some of them are sympathetic because this is now their home, and
yeah.
That was all great. I liked all that.
Yeah, that I really liked. I liked the fact that they didn't ignore, you know, the basic fact that, hey, these people have been around for a long time, you know what I mean, on
yeah.
the planet Earth, and now it's their home too, and they know that it's just going to be decimated, you know. So, I mean, I enjoyed that.
That guy that was with them for much of it, sort of the traitor or whatever to the aliens, you know, that was great. I really liked the third wheel.
It's a good touch. I mean, I'll be picking up the third trade for sure. I think it's it's a solid read, and honestly, this is the one to me. I mean, Archer and Armstrong and Harbinger have like wide scope conspiracy, you know, things going on, but to me this one seems to have the biggest scope, you know what I'm saying, as far
Definitely.
As like the implications, because now you're talking by the second trade there's an alien race that's going to come invade us, and from everything from all the information that we've been given in these two books, like these guys, I mean, we couldn't stand a chance, you know.
I couldn't.
Yeah, so it'll be, to me, it's going to be interesting, but I guess their first crossover is Harbinger Wars, so how does all this play together? I have no idea. I guess we'll figure out
I mean, I haven't read up on what exactly that's about, but
I don't want to. I want to be surprised.
Yeah, me too. I just want to read it.
Yeah, I just want to know that the company's there. So out of the next two, Bloodshot or Shadow Man, which one did you like better?
I'm going to go with Shadow Man.
Really?
Yeah. Even though it's very uneven, but I think when it's good, it's quite good. And with Bloodshot, I think it's more... It never has those same peaks.
Even though it's more consistent, it
doesn't get as high as Shadow Man does.
I think maybe was Bloodshot too testosterone for you?
Testosterone. There's too much pasta in this one.
Yeah, I mean... To me, Bloodshot is the only one out of these that I read that is like ready for a film. You know what I mean? It's like ready for like an action, you know, because it's simple enough and it's direct enough,
yeah.
and the concept is, you know, very much like a Jean-Claude Van Damme. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But
with action movie. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, but with a bigger brain than that. I don't want to.
Right.
Because it's much smarter than that. But I liked Bloodshot more than I liked Shadow Man. But what is it that you thought really stood out to you in Shadow Man more than Bloodshot?
Well, first, the art, I think, is probably one of the... I've always loved Patrick, I assume, Zercher?
Zercher. Yeah, yeah. Zercher, yeah.
And I think this is some of his... Among his best work, I like the setting. I like some of the demon stuff is sort of generic, but what they do with the main character, I think there's moments with him that actually I would have liked to have seen more of. But I think when there's sort of quieter moments with him, The storytelling in that is really nice. You know, with Patrick, it's the dialogue gets out of the way. There's just a little bit of narration, but it's mostly just the quietness of the character, and him kind of coming to terms. And then, you know, and there's just really cool looking monsters. And,
well, yeah, the one big demon, what's his name? I'm flipping through the trade. You know, I can't find his name right now, but he's badass. The guy that's made up of like just pure flesh,
yeah,
like twisting flesh. Like right. That is a really fantastic monster design.
Mr. Twist.
There you go. Yeah, yeah. Sorry. And the fact that he likes to wear a white suit.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean that's really terrific. I mean he's really a great character as far as sort of like the big bad of the story. The guy in the red armor,
right?
Name I cannot remember. Is Dark. Very. What was that?
Dark.
Oh, is that his name? Dark. Yeah.
Darque.
Yeah, Dark. There it is. Dark, come at last.
Darkwa.
Well, he seems very sort of like Buffy the Vampire Slayer, generic evil sorcerer to me.
Yeah.
And that to me was very much why I kind of like Shadow Man comes in a bit last for me, because I feel like it's very much like a little bit Starman and a little bit Buffy the Vampire Slayer. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Where it was like his dad was like the hero before him, and he didn't really know his dad, and now he has to be the hero. I'll tell you what, though. I wasn't so impressed with it's not that I wasn't so impressed with Shadow Man, it just didn't blow me away up until I got to the talking monkey. Once you got a talking monkey with like Mardi Gras makeup on his face and a little top hat, I'm trying to find him in here, I was like, oh, I'm sold, you've got a talking monkey in here. But to me, Shadow Man was the thing that was a little bit too derivative of like other things. And again, much like Harbinger, where I felt like, especially being a fan of like Angel and Buffy the Vampire Slayer, I felt like I've kind of seen this sort of thing before, you know?
Yeah, I mean, definitely his supporting cast, you know, I suppose aside from the monkey, it's a little bit, you know, like, okay, there's his love interest, there's, you know, like I mean, I hear you. I you know, as I say, there's definitely weaknesses, but I thought there were nice character moments in it. And that Patrick's art's really great.
Yeah, did you know that Patrick Zercher, he used to draw...
The New Warriors?
Well, did he really? Oh, yes, I didn't know that. But before he did the New Warriors, he used to draw like character designs for supplements for like superhero role-playing games.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah, this role-playing... And his art has gone like leaps and bounds beyond what it used to be. But in like the mid to late 80s, he was drawing for... this game called Villains of Vigilantes that I was like really into. And as the company sort of kind of petered out, he was doing the artwork on the later modules, like the later supplements. And I'll see if I can scan some of the artwork for you, and you'll be like, no way that's Patrick Zercher. And I'm like, yes, it's totally the same guy. But I mean, to me, Shadow Man, I can understand. Like, to me, Shadow Man seems to have a lot of potential, depending on where it goes.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, if they take it, if they're able to take it in a different direction in the next trade, it could easily become like one of my favorites. But for right now, it's sort of, to me, is very middle of the road, you know?
Yeah.
It's, and you know, to be fair though, I've never been a big fan of like Doctor Strange, like mystic characters, you know?
Those can be, you know, those are tough sells. I mean,
they
always struggle. So, you know, they definitely have a little bit of an uphill road.
Yeah.
You know, I think I liked the whole adoption angle thing.
Yeah.
And I liked the fact that his parents to him are criminals, or as far as he knows, as far as the information he's been given is that these are just criminals.
Yeah.
And I liked all of that stuff.
Yeah. And we haven't even really talked about, I mean, the basic concept is that there's a guy and his dad was the original Shadow Man and they went on the run. Because there was like some big final battle that his father perished in, and his mother took him when he was a little. boy and went on, and then something happened to his mother and he didn't know what happened to his parents. And basically what he ends up finding out is that he's destined to become the next Shadow Man, right?
Right.
Yeah. And so, I mean, that's the basic concept. But like you said, I mean, I do feel like, oh, yeah, here's the pretty girl, and here's his trainer, and here's all the mystical stuff. But there are elements of this that I really love, like, the sort of mid-dimensional... you know, zombie creatures in the Shadow Realm. Mm-hmm. I'm a sucker for zombies. And I mean, like I said, I think this book has potential, but, you know, it kind of meandered around a little bit for me, you know. And that was the one big thing that bugged me, is that all this mystical stuff starts happening to this guy who's never ever suspected or even had a connection, and there's no moment where it's like, oh,
yeah,
shit.
Yeah, he does roll with it a little too easily.
Yeah, no way. I mean, we would crap ourselves. You know, if I saw something like Mr. Twist... Yeah. coming after me, I think I would just be like, you know, you would just go into like a coma. Yeah. Like your brain would just shut down. You wouldn't know what to. Yeah, yeah. And the dude just like leaps into action right away. So, well, I guess that's why he's destined to be the Shadow Man, and you and I are not. Yeah. So I don't know. But,
I like the design of the character, except for the little icon on his.
Yeah, I don't get
what
that.
Is that. It's like, obviously it's a guy entering a doorway with light behind, but it's like that's your logo. That's your, you know, that's just weird.
I know. Well, it's funny because I thought his dad's outfit was much cooler than his.
It is. I agree.
Yeah, and I also feel like this Shadow Man. What's that?
It looks like a suit and tie, sort of the way that it's with the trench coat,
yeah,
and the shirt and everything.
The new one, you know. I mean, at least the old one had like a cloak.
Yeah.
He had like a trench coat, but the new one, it just looks like he's wearing like spandex, you know.
Yeah.
And like, what good is that fighting mystical? I mean, I think they should have maybe gone outside the box with his character design a little more. But it also seems to me that this character design is very much a product of its time, like Image Comics, like the spiky hair, you know what I'm saying? The pouches. Yeah. On his belt, you know, the gloves, the cloth sort of like gloves. So maybe they'll change the design as they go on. I hope they do. But maybe they were kind of trying to stick with the classic design so that fans would, you know, recognize him or just be like, oh, they're not changing too much. But as it goes on, I hope they change stuff, you know. But I'll pick up the next trade for sure. It's entertaining enough that I was like, but okay, so Bloodshot. I really liked Bloodshot a lot.
I just felt that the concepts... Well, I liked it. I think I liked it initially where it seemed like has all these fake lives. But then once that...
Wait. So talk about the concept.
Well, you might be able to explain it better than me.
Well, I mean, essentially, I mean, it's nothing too complex. It's basically this guy has had nanotechnology placed into him. And he's like a super soldier. He can regenerate. He can, you know, go faster, be stronger than the average human being because he's got these this nanotechnology, these cells, sort of like constantly building up his cellular structure as like anything breaks down. So he really can't be stopped. But the problem is, as you know, is often the case, is that he doesn't really know who he is. He's been implanted with like different memories, and you don't really know, and he doesn't really know like where he came from. And so he starts, and the basic premise is that a terrorist group somehow gets access to the technology that created him and is able to kind of like shut him down and mess with him so that he becomes aware that none of his lives are real. And now he's sort of on a quest to like figure out like why was I turned into this monster, and what happened to my real life? Is that pretty much?
I think so. And he was essentially a tool or weapon of the U.S. government or the U.S. Army, right?
Yeah, Exactly. Exactly. And the really great thing that I love about it is that is just the potential for whatever technologies inside of him, like rebuilding him, the potential for that to go wrong. Because apparently, like, if the nanotechnology gets out into the atmosphere, like, it could just end up consuming humanity, like anything in its wake, right?
Yeah, you're right. It's true.
So to me, like, this was a really good combination of, like, horror tropes, you know, where it's sort of like a zombie warrior who can't, like, be killed or ended in any way that we know. He would just keep coming. And, like, an action movie, you know. It's sort of like a little bit like The Punisher meets the Walking Dead, in a way, to me.
I guess my problems with it is, you know, one, nanotechnology is, like, you know, the bionics of the 90s.
It is a little passe at this
point. And you know, he's basically Wolverine. I mean, he heals and he doesn't know who he is, and his past is a history, and he's got all these false memories. And then he's, like you said, the Punisher, because he shoots people. That's, you know, I think initially it started really interesting, and then, you know, some of the flashbacks were like the kid, like, what kid leaps on a white picket fence and impales himself? I mean, like, some of this, the sort of fake memories are just like, what? And then, you know, and then he gets out, and then there's the female that becomes his sidekick that's scrappy and, you know, can take care of herself, and then there's the guys that come out, you know. It just starts to kind of unravel. You know, I just don't think there's enough new interesting things happening. It just feels kind of, you know,
because it's interesting that you point out, like, Wolverine and the Punisher, but there's something that I felt like was deeper in this book than sort of like any Wolverine. I mean, you know, the fact that this guy seems torn up by what he is. Like, I mean, I guess Wolverine at points would be like, you know, I'm so sad. But I never really felt like Wolverine was, like, all that beat up by what he was. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Like, in the end, he's like, I'm the best I am at what I do, you know?
Yeah, but there would always be those stories where he was, you know, he was conflicted and he didn't know what was real and he had to go cry to Professor X, and then they'd have the... going to the astral plane, and he'd poke around his memories, and everybody would cry, and, you know, there was stuff like that.
Yeah, I guess I just never really felt that Wolverine, and you know, it's just one of the things of the X-Men books, you know, it's like, well, he can't really go find out what he is, because then the mystery's over, and in Bloodshot, I actually feel like they're going somewhere, you know what I mean? I feel like that he's on his way to actually find out what he is, and then it's also the sort of the complications of what he is, which could be so dangerous to life on the planet, which is just like, wow, that's kind of like mind-blowing once you figure out, because then there's that whole thing that goes into when he had to sort of eliminate, you know, the nanotechnologies that got out, and he didn't even really know, like, what was happening, or he was part of that, you know, in the medical complex towards the end. And I just felt like that was really powerful stuff, you know. And
I didn't feel a lot of he just felt like a tough guy. I didn't get a lot of,
oh, that's interesting, because sort of, I felt really bad for him, especially like the scenes where, you know, he's with his, is it his wife, is it not his wife, you know. I really felt some empathy for that character, you know. I mean, I hear what you're saying. I do understand that, you know, that this could be sort of seen as just like, you know, a one-dimensional, you know, sort of character. But to me, it kind of reached beyond that. And I loved the artist, Manuel Garcia. Like, I really, there was something about the art that I just really liked a lot, you know?
It was, it's... You know, if you just described the premise of the book to me, I wouldn't have expected this artist to be doing it.
And he has a bit
of a, I don't know. Well, I don't want to say cartoony. It's not cartoony, but
there's a loose. Well, there's a fluidity to that? It. You know, there's a fluidity to the art. You know what I'm saying?
A bit looser than.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like. I guess what we consider like Image Comics, you know, the blocky sort of like rippling muscles,
right.
Like you can tell that this guy has studied, you know, life drawing and stuff like that, because there's enough of a looseness to his muscular figures to that the anatomy looks realistic, but it also doesn't look like, you know, to use sort of like the typical example, a Jim Lee drawing where he's like standing in a pose.
Right.
You know? Yeah. And that's what I really enjoyed about his art. I feel like that for an action book, it's something different, and kind of bends a little bit towards, you know, realistic dimensions, you know, in its proportions. I mean, the way that this guy draws weaponry, I mean, damn. Like, the way he draws guns and stuff, like, I just felt like, wow. You know, that stuff looks really great. This is not like a Leafield gun, you know what
right.
I'm saying? Like, these are real, you know. And I guess that's what I have to say about most of the books that Valiant is doing. As far as I'm concerned, the art, you know, is very balanced in realism without adhering to, like, one particular style. You know what
right.
I mean?
Yeah, I definitely do feel like each artist gets to be who they are.
Yeah, yeah. And I feel like that's what's really good about, you know, the Valiant line in general. Because, like, we were talking a little bit about, like, the whole DC 52 kind of revamp when we saw each other yesterday.
Yeah.
Where I felt like what they should have done is made each superhero book look different. But DC, they kind of look a little bit all the same, you know, to me. And I feel like Valiant has been smart enough to been like, hey, Bloodshot looks different than Shadow Man, and Shadow Man looks different than Exo Man of War. Like, each one has its own sort of, like, distinct identity, you know?
Yeah, there's definitely a flavor to each of them, so it just doesn't
yeah.
feel like you're reading the next chapter of five or six different books, or, you know, five or six chapters of the same book.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like there's a lot of potential going on here, and I just hope it doesn't get screwed up by, like, crossovers or, you know, but I haven't really heard any real negative word on, like, Harbinger Wars, you know? Like, this is confusing, or like, you've messed up the line. But granted, I haven't really been seeking out a lot of that stuff because I kind of want to be surprised by everything, right?
Yeah, yeah. I haven't really looked at reviews. I am again curious how they're going to collect it. It's going to
yeah.
be... I mean, it'll probably... Because I think, is it that there's just a miniseries called Harbinger Wars, but there are...
Yeah.
I think there might be, like, two series that... I don't know if they cross over or just that those characters are in Harbinger Wars.
Well, I think Bloodshot is a major player in Harbinger, and I think, obviously, Harbinger is... And I think that Bloodshot becomes another book that's called, like, Hardcore.
Oh, yeah, Bloodshot and
Hardcore. Corpse. Yeah, yeah.
Yes,
yeah. And so it seems like there's... Which I think is real, like, to me is like, oh, they're just... You know, I mean, who knows? Maybe Bloodshot wasn't selling that well, or and they decided, like, oh, we have to revamp it, or...
I think that might have been... I don't know if Hardcore was its own title in the original Valiant line, or...
Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
I think it was either part of that universe, or it was its own book. I'm not exactly
yeah.
sure, but I mean, to me, that's really kind of cool in a way, because they're willing to change something into something else,
yeah.
which I think is kind of ballsy. You would not see that sort of like at the big two. You wouldn't see like a book start off as one thing. It would just get canceled or something, and
right.
then just become something completely different. Or at least in my recollection, I've never seen that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, every once in
yeah,
a while,
so,
they'll sort of rebrand something. But yeah, usually it's just canceled and replaced with something new.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like I said, I really feel like this is a line of books that, as far as like the trades go, you know, I'm in, like, I'm all in, like, I'm going to be buying them, and I'm not going to hesitate to buy them, because they've shown me a level of quality, you know what I mean, that I have not really seen in a lot of stuff lately, like, in a complete line of comics, you know, and it seems like they make sense when you read them, you know?
Yes, yes.
I don't have to know about the whole rest of the other universe to know what's going on in one of these
yeah,
books.
Yeah, I mean, these are definitely entry-level stories. You don't need
yeah,
to know anything.
Yeah. Yeah, and I feel like as you go on, they still maintain that sort of simplicity, you know? Yeah, and I hope they stay that way. So I'm, as far as I'm concerned, I mean, I'm all in on Image. I wish other companies were doing things the way that Image. Hello, Valiant. Did I say Image before too? That's horrible. I had Image on the brain for some reason, but I'm all in for Valiant, and I really just am very like impressed with everything that I've read. I mean, I haven't been like this excited about like reading a company's line of books in a long time. You know what I mean?
The last time I was sort of like got excited about a universe or a line of, you know, like a publisher's line was CrossGen, and hopefully that's not a curse.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Hopefully that's not dooming Valiant to failure.
Yeah, yeah, that's interesting, because I think I thought about that too while I was reading this. Like the last time that I was like, oh wow, there's so much potential here, was CrossGen. Yeah, that's great. And but CrossGen didn't really do crossovers so early on. They were keeping their books separate.
Yeah,
right?
they did wait for a long time. I mean, that was actually more as they were sort of going under. That was one of their scrambles to you know, to stay alive, and it didn't work.
To try and
a
stay alive.
Too little, too
so,
late.
Do you think you're going to be, buying them?
Yeah, I think
like
so.
In
yeah,
the future?
I'll get. I want to get the next whatever came out today, or I mean Wednesday, and you know, it's easy to fall behind on these things, but yeah, I'll try and keep getting them.
Yeah. It's interesting because I mean, I still love, you know, Marvel. I still love DC. I still love Dark Horse. And I still love. You know, Image, obviously I love Image because I said them, but there's not like a universe out there right now where I want to pick everything up, you know what I mean?
I think my tastes mostly are self-contained stuff. Like I'm not as into universe, you know, superhero universes or just universes in general, and but this definitely satisfies that kind of little itch for that.
Yeah. Hey, what do you think about, you know, just to kind of wrap everything up, like, what do you think about, do you think that they're going to have to add more books to keep the company going? Like, do you think that they are going to, like, do you think that there's a certain amount of books that a company, that a comic book company has to put out in order to maintain their profit margin? Like, that's what I was curious about, because how much more are they going to have to expand?
Yeah, I'm sure. I mean, I'm sure, you know, it depends on sales, and it depends how much, you know, investments and financing they have, and how long that takes, how long that'll take them. But yeah, I mean, I'm sure they're going to expand. I'm sure, you know, if there's more money to be had, then they're going to take advantage of that. I mean, any company will.
See, yeah, and that's where I get kind of worried, because I mean, the big reason that I can't collect Marvel on a regular basis or DC, besides, you know, the astronomical prices, and why I read trades from them, is because there's just too much. Like, I can't keep up with it, and too much of it is interwoven with everything else, you know what
I mean?
Yeah,
I mean, I hope they'll, you know, if they don't show restraint, at least take their time to get up to that number. I mean, they're already adding Quantum and Woody, and I'm sure there's going to be something else down the line. You know, I hope from what I've read, they want to really sort of be methodical about it, and they don't want to rush in and just dump a ton of product all at once. So I'm hoping that if they at least take their time, at least we'll have a few years before we can't get everything.
Before we're like doing the I Hate Valiant podcast.
Right, exactly.
Well, anyway, for now, I love Valiant, and I don't know if love is too strong a word for Corey, but I'm really excited, and I'm really happy that I discovered them. I'll heavily make out
with them for a while.
you'll do some heavy petting,
exactly.
But you won't commit. Yeah, I'm ready to have my heart broken by Valiant. That's how it goes. But yeah, I'm excited, and you know, I'm really psyched about the books, and like you said, I mean, whatever comes out Wednesday, I don't know if I'm going to be picking it up on Wednesday, but I will definitely be grabbing it as soon as I can. So, you know, we are fans of Valiant, so great. And that, I guess that pretty much wraps it up, because that's all the trades that I have and all the books that I have.
Hands are empty.
So, yeah, hands are empty. So, well, thanks for joining us for another episode of Part-Time Fanboy. I'm Christian Horn, and that is Corey Blake. And hopefully join us next week. I'm going on vacation, but hopefully we can get it together to have another episode of Part-Time Fanboy, if not next week, but the week after. And thanks for listening.
Part-Time Fanboy. Fanboy.com.